Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I really hope you've had a good week. Unbelievable weather, hasn't it been? Unbelievable. Just so much going on in the world at the moment. Obviously, earlier in the week, it was World Mental Health Day. And so I thought it would be a really good opportunity to have another listen to an interview that I did a while ago around all kinds of aspects of mental well-being. So I thought that might be a nice one to rerun. Before we get into all of that, I just want to tell you about our sponsor. So I mentioned Awake Organics last week, just such a great company, a growing family business. They're based in Buckinghamshire. And all of their products are carefully formulated, and they've got these fantastic organic, sustainable ingredients, and they're really dedicated to formulating great skincare, natural skincare that help you enjoy the luxury, but you don't have to compromise on the sustainability either. And as I said last week, it's just, I find it so interesting that when people stop drinking, they finally have a little bit of bandwidth to be able to look at what else is going on in their life and how they can actually have some non-toxic skincare as well, you know, and tick the eco box, because this is a brand that has a small supply chain. 89% of their ingredients and their packaging is made in the UK. So, and you really don't have to worry about any scary, in inverted commas, chemicals in all of their stuff. So there's no parabens or sodium lauryl sulfate or aluminium or petrochemicals, and they're certified cruelty-free by Leaping Bunny, which is always worth it for the name alone, isn't it? It's a real commitment to ending animal testing. So they're a great brand to support. And I mentioned last week they do this wonderful, they've got a whole range of great products, but they do this wonderful water-activated shampoo, which is great, like a powder shampoo. But I thought this week I'd just give a heads up, for no particular reason, on the deodorants. It's actually a great place to start if you're thinking about, you know, kind of changing around some of your products. Start with a natural deodorant because, you know, they're not expensive. They're aluminium free. These are 100% natural and they're really effective. I would say, you know, give yourself a few days to before you go, oh, doesn't work. Natural deodorants don't work. Give yourself a few days if you've been used to spraying on hideous kind of antiperspirants. These are 100% natural, as I say. They use supplement grade magnesium in the formula. So actually, you know, what's not to like? You can up your magnesium levels as well via their transdermal application. And they've got a range of natural deodorants. So they've got an unscented one for very sensitive skin right through to extra strength. So great place to start on your non-toxic journey and have a check of their all their other great products as well. So it's awakeorganics.co.uk, awakeorganics.co.uk. And with your first purchase, you can get a special discount of 20%. So you need to use the code JANEYLEE20. And Janey Lee is in capital letters. So JANEYLEE20. And that's in capital letters. And I'll make sure that goes in the show notes as well. So as a little reminder. So enjoy. So back on what we were talking about then with World Mental Health Day earlier in the week. You know, I asked some Sober Club members, how has their mental health improved since stopping drinking? And, you know, the response is just, it's just absolutely amazing, because the reality is life changes in so many ways. I mean, I wish I could document everything. It's hard, really, to document just how much your life changes when you stop drinking. But one member says, I'm literally transformed. I've learned how to self-regulate. I understand that my emotions are messages. I know that I'll always have both good days and less good days, and I'm still enough on the less good days. I meet situations and conversations with a far more balanced headspace, and I feel brave, curious, and safe. That's just beautifully, beautifully put there. Someone else says, I've got so much less anxiety and so much less second guessing of my own behavior. I'm a very different person in a really positive way. It's so true, isn't it? It's so true. What so often lies behind our addictions, our imbalances is this lack of self-esteem, this lack of self-love, this not knowing quite who we are, because we're pouring toxic liquid down so regularly. And when we can ditch the booze, when we can get free from this alcohol trap, just what an incredible difference, you know, it can start to make. But it doesn't always happen instantly. There can be, you know, a lot of work to be done. And, you know, it may well be that we need to do other work as well as ditching the booze, but I would still say ditching the booze comes first. On that note, by the way, just a quick mention for Constellations this weekend. If you are listening to this on Friday, we have Family Constellations this Sunday in Hertfordshire. So, of course, I can't talk about great mental well-being without throwing that into the frame, because it is such an incredible way of just completely changing your perspective, really, on just about everything. It really is incredible. It's a tricky one to explain, but I've got a bunch of articles and blog posts about it. So go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, and you can read about Family Constellations. It's a one-day workshop. Just come and be open-minded. You know, it's not expensive. It's an amazing day to just try something completely different. You don't have to take part. You don't need any prior knowledge. You don't come with anything. You just come as you are and just be open-minded. It's really quite an experience. So if you are interested in that, just go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, and you'll find the information there about Family Constellations, or drop me a message and I'll pop the link to that in the show notes as well. The day before that, we've got a day for coaches and therapists and Heart Center business experts. So there's quite a lot going on this weekend. And we had a fantastic weekend last weekend, by the way, with our sober coach training. Thank you for asking. This is all very linked to World Mental Health Day, which was a few days ago. Because let's face it, that's what we're all doing, isn't it? We're all trying to walk this path of how we can create this life and focus on this life that we don't want to escape from, how we can come back to that sense of balance and equilibrium. So anyways, to that end, rather than reinvent the wheel, I realized that I've been talking a lot again recently about this phrase, you are enough. And I know it's been overused, but you know what? It's true. You actually are enough. You really just need to start to know that yourself, right? And one of my guests from a while back, Cheryl Rickman, I've interviewed her before. She's a prolific author. She's got some fantastic books. And I remembered that I'd interviewed her for her book, You Are Enough. And I thought, let's just rerun that rather than try and reinvent the wheel. Let's have another listen to that conversation with Cheryl, because I think it's just perfect. And it really does sum up all the stuff we talk about an awful lot of the time. So enjoy the interview. You know, one of the phrases that I say an awful lot to my clients is, you are enough. And that's the title of a great new book by Cheryl Rickman. You are enough. Embrace your flaws and be happy being you. What a fabulous sentiment. Welcome, Cheryl.
Hi there. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so chuffed for you. It's just such a great book, and you know, it's one of the phrases that's been used a lot in recent years, but it's brilliant that you've actually sort of unpacked it all and actually you know, brought some meaning to it. So just before we get into it, just tell us a little bit about your background for anyone who hasn't heard you, because I've interviewed you before.
Yeah, I've I started to study positive psychology in 2015. And yeah, I've written a ghostwriter, so I've written books for other people, but started writing books to help people kind of fret less and flourish more. Sort of inspired by the loss of both my parents and wanting to help people make the most of their lives, I guess. Mm. And this book is very much from that sentiment. You know, we're told a lot of the time to kind of abide by societal, I call them the shackles of should, that, you know, society tells us we should should look a certain way, or we should behave a certain way, or should want a certain dream to come true. And it can be quite restrictive and make us feel like we don't measure up. And so I wanted to write something that speaks to people and, like you say, unpacks all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just tell us a little bit about, if for anyone who doesn't really know what positive psychology is, just explain that for us.
Yeah, so psychology was very much about getting people from sort of not very well to neutral. And positive psychology is really the study of getting people from, well, it's north of neutral, so flourishing. You know, focusing on interventions that can really make you sort of function really well. Really kind of just developing that sort of side of things. So focusing on the good and counting your blessings, and also obviously understanding that there's a whole spectrum of emotion and it's okay to feel not good sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's sort of acceptance of that as well, but it's more about the sort of trying to flourish in life.
I love that. I mean, it links so well with the work that I do around positive sobriety, because, you know, similarly with sobriety, we don't have to wait until we are unwell to come back to a neutral state. We can actually start from where we are now and embrace the fact that how much better life is going to be when you're not actually hampering yourself with a toxic liquid. It links really well. And, you know, one thing I'm always talking about is how, you know, how exciting it is to actually look towards creating a life that you haven't got to escape from, you know, so that you actually are willing to step into. And as you say, that doesn't necessarily mean everything's going to be perfect, of course. Kind of doesn't work that way, does it? Let's you know, dig into this topic then. What is the issue? I know in the book you talk about how really this goes back to the fact that we are actually hardwired to seek approval of others.
Yes. It's basically an ancient kind of survival response, that we are kind of wired to care what other people think about us because we were part of tribes, and we're wired really to fear rejection because we didn't want to get booted out of a tribe, because fending for yourself back in when, you know, in the Stone Age times was a dangerous kind of thing. So social acceptance and belonging are very important to our brains. So what we do is we seek out, we kind of define how well we're doing from a sort of combination of things, but from external feedback, including what society says we ought to be doing and so on, and expectations that are put on us by externally. And then inner self-talk, which obviously, you know, inner critic and imposter syndrome and all these different things. But unfortunately, what a lot of people don't realise is a lot of that data that we're basing our self-worth on is actually incorrect or inaccurate. And inflexible, and it's often based on beliefs that we've sort of thought process that we've thought about over time to become beliefs, and they can be actually, for example, external feedback can be based on something that's very inaccurate, because it could be somebody's having a bad day, so they've just dished out a judgmental comment, and actually it's nothing to do with you, it's because they've been feeling bad themselves. Or perhaps, you know, you might remind somebody of somebody that's hurt their feelings. And often the external feedback kind of has nothing to do with you. It's to do with somebody else's kind of own prejudices and expectations and all those sorts of things. And then our internal self-talk is often to do with, you know, this negativity bias that we've got that's ingrained in us. Again, a survival mechanism to make sure we kind of worry first to prevent anything terrible happening, and also sort of like be quite judgmental, and also on things like comparing ourselves to others, which again, as we know, you know, the whole compare and despair thing, often we're comparing our sort of blooper reel, if you like, to everybody else's highlights reel. So again, that's very inaccurate. Mm. You know, there's a phrase I say in the book, which is something like the grass is greener because it's AstroTurf. Because yeah. often, you know, it's glossy and shiny and people aren't showing their true wholesale selves because we can't do that. So yeah, all these the external thing is obviously very, is it can be inaccurate, and so can the internal. Mm.
It is interesting, isn't it? This whole judgmental thing, because, mm-hmm. you know, I get the hardwiring for approval. Bit, you know, we want to fit in, we want to be accepted. I get that completely, but I just wonder why we're so many of us are really kind to other people, and you know, whatever their flaws, we accept them, and we, you know, we just sort of think, oh well, it's just how he is, how she is, and but when it comes to ourselves, we are incredibly unkind and very judgmental, and yeah. you know, over dramatize everything, and we literally find it very hard to see. As I mean, somebody wants that lovely description of, you know, in your head, you know, you're this kind of big stick person and everyone else is a little stick person. But in their head, they're the big stick person. So, yeah. you know, we all do this, don't we? So it's a wonder that we can't kind of grasp that and go, well, do you know what? Maybe other people don't think that I look as terrible as I think I look or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so true. We're just very harsh on ourselves. And what's really interesting is if you think about books and films, we tend to gravitate towards perhaps characters that are imperfect. Like, we like a flawed hero. You know, we like somebody who's got quite a lot to learn and, oh, they've made that mistake, and because we can relate to them and we like that. We prefer sort of flawed characters are more likeable.
And the kind of underdog thing, isn't it? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we do definitely like that.
Yeah, and yet, when we make mistakes or we are imperfect and flawed, we give ourselves such a hard time. And actually, the irony is we're probably more likable which is obviously the social acceptance thing, when we are showing our flawed selves and being vulnerable and showing up kind of authentically. And actually, yeah, you know, I'm not very good at this and I'm winging this, and actually being honest about that. So that's that kind of strange irony that actually when we show up as our true selves, which is flawed, we're probably going to be more more accepted anyway, rather than perfection and striving for that sort of all these expectations, which I think the expectation side can really get us down. So
yeah, there's that lovely phrase, isn't there, flawsome. You're awesome, yes. but also potentially flawed, and that's okay yeah, too.
Definitely.
Tell us a bit more about this perfection that we're all reaching for, and the sort of pressures of perfection and expectation. I mean, you touched on it, you know, when you mentioned the sort of the grass is greener. You know, where does the sort of social media fit in? Because obviously it's ramped, the whole thing has ramped up, the expectation has ramped up in recent years, but it has always been the case that we've done this comparing thing, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think what happens is really as soon as you're born, unfortunately for parents, it's this, you know, oh, well, they were talking at such and such an age, and oh, yes, they're walking now. And, you know, in the playground, it's sort of who can run the fastest and who can, you know, you're put into sets sort of for academics. And and sometimes perhaps with siblings, you know, one sibling might be amazing at one thing and another at something else. And so it is kind of deeply ingrained in our society that we compare ourselves even before social media. And this sort of pressure to be perfect or to do well. And I think that the answer, I think, perhaps, is to choose different metrics of measurement, because we're measuring each other against everything, whether it's academically or you know, house size or how many holidays a year. And actually, when we stop for a second and think, there's two things we can do really, is choosing different metrics. So it doesn't have to be about success or academics or whatever. It's you know, what makes you feel alive, and you know, what is it in your life, whether it's having a good hug with somebody you love, or looking at the sunset, remembering to look at the sunset, things like that. Have you done that enough? You know, that can be the metric of, you know, just much more sort of life affirming things like that. And actually measuring, you know, kindness and contribution and love, they can be the metrics that you sort of measure yourself. If you need a metric, you know, have I made someone smile today? You know, and that can be enough. So I do think, that it's kind of like going back to that idea of with the comparing as well, is actually, have I been enough me today?
Yeah, you know? I love that. Yeah, I love that. But, you know, we're not taught that in school at all. I mean, we really are not. You know, it's I mean, what would you like to see change in that respect?
I think it is really, I mean, certainly when it comes to school, is nurturing people's individual spark. And you know, I think the whole don't get me started on education, I think there's a lot that can be done there to really sort of find out what people enjoy doing and what they're good at, and then let them focus on that, because that can be their job
absolutely
rather than try and be good at all these different things that actually you might struggle with, and then that can make you feel less than good enough when you know. So I think also really making sure that people, children especially with social media, just reminding them that there's the filter thing, you know, that lots of things, it's all edited and filters and everything and not real life, and you can't see the whole picture. So, you know, for example, if you think about how we used to share photo albums before social media.
We'd choose the best ones, right?
You wouldn't just put, you know, you going to around the supermarket doing your day-to-day stuff. You pick holiday photos
or a picture of your dinner.
Exactly. Yeah, you'd put all the best stuff, and that's how you'd you know, collate it, and that's really what social media does. And so to compare anything with that, you know, even if you're comparing your best stuff to somebody else's best stuff, you're still not seeing the whole picture. And you know, the perfect family shot of somebody with their soulmate, and their, you know, it's all glorious and wonderful, and actually they might have just had the mother of all rows 5 minutes ago, but they didn't share that part. And that's the other thing, I think we don't share the difficult stuff often, partly because we maybe don't want to, and or partly because it's actually not ours to share. So if you're having a difficulty in your relationship, or it's not really, that's about somebody else, that would be invading someone else's privacy. They might not want you to talk about that on social media, some other issue that you're having. It might be private for somebody else, or your child, or any things like that. So you don't share the rough parts, it's only the smooth. So I think we have a tendency to kind of envy up. I think it's it's called envy up or scorn down. So you either envy and think, oh, their life looks so wonderful, or oh well, at least I'm doing better than that person. And actually like I said, if we just sort of choose this more sort of temporal comparison, where we're sort of just measuring our progress perhaps compared to yesterday, so we're more comparing ourselves to how we did yesterday, and that's sort of a bit more healthy way to do it.
I mean, when people are ditching the booze, you know, I hear time and time again people will say, I'm so angry with myself. I'm so useless. I'm so hopeless. And, you know, I ended up having a drink again, and I said I wasn't going to. And there's this sort of barrage of absolute sort of self-hatred, really, comes flying out. And yet the minute they posts a message like that on you know, on my group, on the Sober Club, the amount of love shared with them is immense, because not because anyone's saying, well, good for you, you decided to relapse. Everyone's saying, well, you know what, it happened, but what can you learn from it? And how amazing is it that you've noticed it this time and that you felt like shit? Because, you know, that's a great lesson. You know, and so they get all this kind of love bombing and then they feel buoyed up again. So, you know, the power of that connection is really important. And I think the danger is when we are alone with our inner critic, that's when it gets really bad, isn't it? When we literally take ourselves off and just listen to that voice of absolute self-hatred.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Like, share it. Like, your mistakes are how we learn, and we know that. But so actually, you know, you're more likely to if you relapse and you share it with other people and people can relate to it, like you go, okay, what made that happen? And also giving yourself permission to be human, because, you know, you can't get it right the whole time, and things happen, and you know, sort of falling off the wagon or whatever. If you just get back on, then it's okay. You know, so it's a bit like if you're having, you know, your inner critic and you really dwell on it and you spend a lot of time there. And I guess the same would be with alcohol. If you relapse and you keep, it's continuous and you don't get back on. So I think it's just recognizing this thing and giving yourself a break, and actually knowing that, look, you know, a tiny bit of progress is progress. And if you step back, you fall off, or you do make a mistake, you can learn from it and
get back on the horse, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking with Cheryl Rickman, the book is You Are Enough, Embrace Your Flaws and Be Happy Being You. Cheryl, I'm really interested in the way you talk about this whole thing of our inner committee. You know, we spoke earlier about the voice, you know, the voice in our head that tells us we're not good enough. But you're saying we've got a whole committee in there.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have. So you've got sort of the inner critic, and that's kind of driven by this negativity bias that will focus on the one criticism that somebody else may have pointed out, or that you've done, you said something, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, if only I'd not said that, instead of all the wonderful things you've said, you know. So so you've got the inner critic, imposter syndrome obviously pops up.
That's a big one. I've been having a lot of that lately.
Oh, yes. But you know, and it's what's so interesting is literally everybody, you know, I think Michelle Obama and all these sort of wonderful people that you think, oh, you know, they're so confident, but everybody has it and thinks, oh gosh, I'm going to get found out. And I think it's accepting that and knowing that that is completely normal, and we do have those that inner committee, shitty committee, as it's sometimes referred to.
I love that. I've heard that one before. Oh my god, I have to credit you every time. I love it.
Yeah. So that's definitely a thing. I think it's what is important is it's almost imagining you've got a boardroom and you've got these members of your that committee, and then actually sometimes having an inner cheerleader there.
Yeah.
To go, oh, okay, well, yes, you did say that, and perhaps you could have done that differently. But remember the other day when you did this and you were really proud of yourself, and just remember that, and just sort of reminding you of the good stuff. So you've got sort of an inner cheerleader to sort of combat the inner critic. And then also like a joy detective, I would say.
Lovely.
Who literally you have to really sometimes really look hard to find the silver lining and find the good and count the blessings and focus on what you've got to be grateful for rather than what you, oh, I wish I had this, and I wish you just felt, you know, what you've got now. And, you know, that can be a real good sort of counter to the negativity bias when you really focus on that. And then also just the inner cheerleader side of things, sort of really thinking about your strengths. There's different, I think I might have mentioned it when we spoke before, but there's different things you can find online that sort of tell you a bit more about what your strengths are, like quizzes.
Yeah.
And there's one called the VIA Strengths Values in Action, VIA Strengths Finder. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a long, it's like a 25-minute survey, but it's so accurate. And it just tells you things like, you know, that you're really very optimistic, or you've got a lot of zest, or your leadership is one of your strengths. And just sort of reminding yourself of what your strengths are and what you've been through, you know, I think that's key.
I think most of us don't sort of acknowledge ourselves enough. We never sing our own praises. You know, when I work with people who are, you know, sort of growing their business, and I'm helping them to get their, a bit of PR or whatever, you know, I'll ask them to talk about something great about them, and no one can do it. They can tell you the stuff that where it relates to the work they do. So, you know, you might sort of pull out of them eventually, you know, oh, my products are eco-friendly and I'm a good listener and I'm a good team player. But they very rarely can get to the point where they can actually say something fabulous about themselves, because we're really not taught to do that. That's egotistical, allegedly, you know.
That's self-love.
Exactly, that's self-care, self-love, and all of, and those things have kind of been drummed out of us at a very early age. And certainly in my case, you know, I thought the self-care was the glass of wine. You know, I had no idea what it meant, no idea at all. So what are your sort of top tips for us then, apart from getting the book, obviously, where can we start? What are a few little things we can, that everyone can do to start to recognize that, you know, we are enough?
One of the can be quite powerful, actually, is digging out a photograph of yourself as a child.
Yeah.
And if you think about, you know, you would never, like the way we speak to ourselves, often people say, or speak to yourself like you would, you're like a good friend.
Yeah.
And that's great. But also sometimes speak to yourself like you would a child that you really love and care about.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't, the last thing you would do is, you know, like really with vitriol put down a child in a certain way. And yet we speak like that to ourselves all the time. So sometimes finding a photograph of yourself as a child, and even sort of taking a photo of it and having it on your phone and just looking at it and just reminding, and sometimes looking at it and thinking, actually, you know, I'm going to be nicer to this person.
Yes, absolutely.
She's doing her best with what she's got, and you know, she's going to mess up sometimes, and that's fine. So that's one way, and that can also lead you to the idea of seeing yourself through the eyes of someone who believes in you, like always seeing yourself, you know, through a friend's eyes or a parent's eyes or somebody, and actually you know, so you can try and cultivate that sort of self-belief. And I think in my book there's I'll read this little snippet, which is about sort of seeing yourself through the eyes of someone who believes in you and sees your potential, and you know, perhaps is even not just a friend but a fan of yours. And I say in the book, seeing yourself as not good enough is like a sunset thinking it's not orange enough, or it's too glowy, or a mountain thinking it's not high enough or too jaggedy. The sunset's amazing, the mountain is amazing, you are amazing. So it's just reminding yourself of that by seeing the best in yourself, and sometimes writing down something nice that someone said about you, because you focus, your negativity bias will focus so much on all the terrible things that you then internalize. Actually, someone said that, you've got really nice eyes, or I love the way you lit, you're a really good listener. Just writing that down, and I am a good listener, can internalize it. So sometimes I would say writing down kind of our positive I am statements.
And I was talking to another coach who was saying that, you know, and this is something that we definitely do in NLP, is that we look at the the things that we say, you know, that we always say, I'm always this, or I'm never that, you know, it's the always and the never, isn't it? They're the kind of things that, because they've been so ingrained in us, that that's what we think we've become. And we all do this. We're all guilty of it. I catch myself. So, oh, I never do that. You know, and then you have, well, hold on. I mean, is that actually a fact? Or is it just a limiting belief that I never do that, or that I always do something or always say something? So I guess that's, you know, as you say, the what do you call it? The shoulds. What's your word about the shoulds?
Oh, the shackles.
Oh, the shackles. Yeah. Yes. Which I guess is the same thing. So how do we deal with the shackles of shoulds then?
I think that there's another sort of phrase of taking your thoughts to court.
Yeah. You mentioned that last time. I love it.
Yeah. Just actually questioning. Some of those thoughts, and actually, if you could find one bit of evidence to that, you know, to support or deny the claim that you're making, that you're terrible, you're never going to be good at this, and actually, if you could find one shred of evidence to counter that, then it's obviously not accurate, and you can sort of reframe it. And as far as the shackles of should go, I think it's, there's quite a lot of exercises in the book that you can sort of go through, and for each of these things, like the pressures of perfection and the shackles of should and compare and despair and so on. But one of the things is to kind of think about the shoulds, what are the shoulds that you've been told in your life? Mm-hmm. So it could be, you should say, for example, at work, you know, you should wear very dark clothes, and you should be present yourself in a certain way, and actually thinking, well, is that me? And I think it always comes back to, am I being me enough again? And so actually, no, I like colourful things. I am going to wear colour. I can still be smart, but I can wear colourful clothes. So I think it's sort of going back to those, because society does literally sit us down and tell us what we should wear or should.
Well, we're a lot more controllable, aren't we, if we're all doing exactly the same thing?
Yeah, and they can sell more things to us if we think we're, you know, not young looking enough or young. And actually, no. It's very much, yeah, just going back to measuring ourselves in different ways. And, you know, if thinking about your values, what matters to you. So actually, if kindness is a value or honesty is a value, and that's really important to you, then I think, you know, sometimes measuring yourself a bit, if you're going to, on those things, can combat the shoulds that you're told. And actually, you know, did I speak kindly to that person, or was I polite, or was I honest? Yes, there you go, that's enough then.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an important point too, because, you know, I think, well, certainly a lot of the people that I work with, if you've been drinking for years, people are often not very good at setting boundaries, and that they're, you know, huge people pleasers. And so they'll literally start drinking just because somebody else suggests they should. So just to literally kind of hang out with someone else, they'll end up drinking again. And what's really interesting is when you've finally cracked this and you can just sort of step into your new identity, you realize that it is okay to be yourself, and that might mean saying no.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I should just have a drink because it's the social, you know, to be sociable or whatever. And it's really tuning into what your own integrity. Yeah. And, you know, you've made this decision which is a great decision, to find other, you know, to not drink, or to you know, there's life after booze, and there's lots of so much. So you've made the decision, so that's what you want to stick to, and that's okay. And also, I think people are accepting, and when you're yourself, I think people really do admire
that.
Well,
I think that's it, isn't it? I think it all comes back to that authenticity that you feel. There's something really very powerful and very attractive about someone who is completely authentic, even though you might not agree with them or you feel the same way. There's a sort of respect, isn't there, when someone is standing in their kind of authenticity.
Definitely. Yeah.
It takes a while to get to that, though, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's not hard, and that's because of all these expectations, I think, that we have to live up, we think we have to live up to. But yeah, just recognizing that actually being flawed, which is the human, that's everybody is flawed, has flaws. But when you remember that actually that's quite, what's the word? Not redeeming, admirable, can't think of the word.
Well, it's very relatable.
Yeah, it's very relatable, and it's just something we admire really when you know, like I said, with books and films and stuff, and in real life. So I think it's just acknowledging that and then just showing up as yourself, and that being okay. And actually, that's so freeing, because that's why I say the shackles of should, because really, when you release them, and you're free just to be yourself. I do think sometimes it can get easier with age. I do think you there's a sort of period when you're a teenager and in your 20s and stuff that you can be so trapped in this wanting to be liked and peer pressure and everything else, and you can, when you sort of, you start to realize that actually I can stop worrying about what other people think of me, because they're not thinking of me, they're worried about what I think of them. So when you have that kind of light bulb moment, and then obviously you still, the social acceptance and belonging and stuff still matters, but I think it's you can release those shackles of should and just sort of step into your own power and focus on, you know, your strengths, but also embrace and accept your weaknesses as actually sometimes quite attractive, you know.
Definitely. And that's how we get to optimum health and wellness, really, isn't it? Because I think when you're in constant stress and, you know, feeling under judgment and full of these limiting beliefs and sort of arguing with yourself the whole time, it's putting a huge stress on your body, actually.
Yeah, it does. And actually, it doesn't get you anywhere, because you're not then enjoying the journey. I heard Fern Cotton actually earlier say, she was on her Instagram, and she said that, you know, if you're striving for perfection, you're miserable.
Yeah.
What's the point? You're not enjoying the journey. And I think that's the key thing. I think just thinking about what can I do. One of the other things that I focus on about enoughness is I've been doing this list of delight. I think I mentioned in the previous conversation, and that's really helpful, because it's just the little things, like the smell of coffee.
Love it.
You know, those tiny things. It doesn't have to be big. And then, because there's so much pressure on achievement, and you've got to do this, and you've got to achieve all these things, and do. That's why I've put the book into sort of, you know, being enough, doing enough, looking enough, feeling enough. Am I feeling happy enough? Am I, you know? So there's all these kind of, goes across all these things. And I think actually, if you just have these small little recognition that of these moments of delight, then, you know, that's enough. You know, that can be enough. And also have I done enough? You know, your to-do list. Actually, I did two things, and that's enough.
That's right. Brilliant. I love it. Thank you so much, Cheryl Rickman. The book is You Are Enough, Embrace Your Flaws and Be Happy Being You. Thank you so much, Cheryl. It's great to chat to you.
Thank you, Janie. Really enjoyed that conversation. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Cheryl. So we'll put the link to Cheryl's book in the show notes, along with details of those upcoming events. So tomorrow, Saturday the 14th, there's a Heart-Centered Business Day. On Sunday the 15th, there's Family Constellations Workshop in Hertfordshire. I work with a leading trauma expert. It sounds like it's all very heavy, but actually you leave usually feeling very inspired. And then after that, we've got Self-Care and Sobriety at Champneys, November the 4th and 5th, Champneys in Tring in Hertfordshire. It would be so fantastic if some of you could come to that. That's another way of just kind of reinforcing that you are enough. Come and treat yourself to a Champneys weekend. And then into December, I have finally announced my very special guest. December the 5th at Club Soda Tasting Room in London, we have a meetup, a Christmas meetup, and a live podcast recording. And my very special guest is none other than Catherine Gray. I know. How cool is that? Honestly, Catherine was such an inspiration for me in the early days. I read The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. I mean, what a title. And it just made me, everything changed. I read that book, everything changed. So Catherine has been a huge inspiration to me. I have interviewed her many times on the podcast before, but she's agreed to come and chat to us, which is just fantastic. So I don't know how many tickets there are left, but go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, or go to Club Soda. And there may be a few tickets left there. If the tickets are sold out, register your interest, and then if there's any cancellations, we'll let you know. So we've got lots going on. There's also, by the way, an event in Manchester on Sunday the 29th of October with a few of my sober coaches, including Andy Blackman from After Party. They're hosting an event in Manchester during the day, Sunday 29th, and I'm going to be speaking at that one. So if you're in that area, it'd be great to see you, and hopefully see some of you on Sunday at Family Constellations. Just a quick reminder, you might be in the middle of Sober October. If you are, keep going. Focus only on what you're gaining. You know, I keep saying this, but it's so true. Don't use the phrase giving up. Just don't use it, because your unconscious mind will think, oh dear, I'm giving something up. I'm having to, you know, make a sacrifice. No, you're really not. Just focus on everything that you're gaining. Make sure you eat really well. Make sure you get some great alcohol-free drinks. Keep the ritual, change the ingredients, and make sure you get connected. It is really important to share what you're doing with somebody else, but it doesn't have to be your family and friends. In fact, it's better if it isn't, really, because they haven't been there, done it, got the t-shirt. So come and join us in the Sober Club, because we will be your cheerleaders. We will absolutely cheer you on. And there's a wealth of material. We've been talking about World Mental Health Day. I mean, in the Sober Club, we've got just so much incredible, exclusive content in there. We've got meditations with amazing spiritual gurus like John Siddiqui, and a movement meditation session with a shaman, Yakov Darling Khan. And we've got hypnosis audios with Glenn Harold and Elsa Frank. And we've got angel meditations with Beverly Densham. And we've got, I mean, just so much stuff in our Sober Club member portal that, you know, what's not to like? It's not expensive. Come and join us. There's just so much inspiration there. But if that's not your thing and you don't want to do that, fine. But just tell someone, tell me if you like. You can drop me a message, and I will reply to as many messages as I possibly can. Because I think it's really important to tell someone. If you don't, it's you and the wine witch walking along, having a little conversation. I had a message from someone the other day on the Sober Club just saying, I'm writing this to hold myself accountable, because I've otherwise the wine witch is telling me, literally telling me, to go into a shop and buy some booze. And I'm really worried that I'm going to do that. Now, just by connecting there, remembering to connect, remembering to make herself accountable, we were obviously able to talk her down and remind her, come on, sweetheart, it is not worth it. There are zero benefits to drinking. Play that tape forward. You're going to feel so much better tomorrow when you've held yourself accountable. There's always another way. So do get connected. It really, really makes a difference. And if you are, you know, halfway through Sober October, well done you. Fantastic. Keep going. Just absolutely keep going. How about keeping going till January? Then you'll really feel fantastic. So you know where to find all the stuff. You know where to follow me. If you haven't already, follow me on social media at Jane Yulee Grace. If you would like to make a donation to this work, you'd be very grateful. Obviously, if you want to join the Sober Club, that's amazing. We have a Sober Club Give Back Fund, which is our kind of charity arm of the Sober Club. You can buy me a coffee. Go to buymeacoffee.com/Jane Yulee Grace, I think. That would seem reasonable, wouldn't it? And thank you so much for listening. You know, last week, the podcast was number 16, I think, in the Apple Music Mental Health Chart. And I'm so grateful to you guys. Thank you so much for listening. It makes a really big difference. I mean, this is obviously not a big production. It's me, you know, it's me and Sunny Etchell who edits the podcast. That's it. You know, I don't have a publisher or a big team or a, you know, any of the big publishing houses behind me. It's just me. It's a bit of a little, you know, bit of a labor of love, but I absolutely love bringing you this podcast, and the fact that you're listening and pushing it up the mental health chart is just fantastic. So huge thank you to all of you, and you know, please share and review it and all of that stuff, and I will see you same time next week.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review, and if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.